But they see themselves as concierges that do stuff. Now, I want you to remember that, because later on we're going to talk about what it is that we're supposed to be doing, and looking good and sounding good is not the same thing as actually doing the job that you were given to do. And I don't think I'm being critical of the Brussels police, because they're doing what obviously they were told to do, and they do look nice, they do look good, but they're concierges. I think about the fact that our lesson today is from Ephesians, and I want to tell you what Ephesians was. Let's go to the next slide. I'm having trouble here. Ephesians in the very first century would be much like, or the city of Ephesus would be much like Vegas. Let's go back to Vegas. And Vegas, of course, is an interesting city, and their motto is, what happens in Vegas stays in Vegas, and that's kind of the philosophy. I'm not sure that's a very good philosophy, but anything that you can imagine in the way of outside of the norm activities, it's all there in Vegas, readily available for a small fee, whatever. And so we think of Vegas as being a place of Sin City, and we call it Sin City. It's a place, everything from casinos to prostitution to whatever it is that you can imagine, it's probably available for you there in Vegas somewhere. And that's much the way the city of Ephesus was when the scripture that Paul wrote to the church took place. Now, several years ago, I met this guy who had just started a church in Vegas. Now, you think about starting a church in Vegas, it's probably like starting a church at Myrtle Beach or maybe West Palm Beach during spring break. It would be a challenge, and he talked about the challenge of actually starting a church in Las Vegas. Now, this is the guy that pastors this church today, and believe it or not, it's a huge church. Huge. They have four satellite locations, and I went to their website, and these are people, and if you want to do this, the church is called Central Church, and these are people that give their testimonies about how it is that they came to the church and how it was that they came to know Jesus, and they're incredible testimonies, because most of them come out of what we would think of as the gaming industry in Vegas. And the challenge of creating and planting a church in Vegas, yet the need to do that. And I mean, what do you say to people if they, let's say they run a roulette table? Or what do you say to somebody that drives the taxi? Is it okay to drive the taxi that transports the people to the roulette table? And then it's not okay for the people that run the roulette table? You see, just all of those kind of challenges, and that's really how the church at Ephesus was. And so Paul is writing this letter knowing that these people live in that city and want to be believers, and yet Paul is saying, how is it that you can do this and call yourselves followers of Christ? All right, now we've set that up for you just to say, we have a purpose and we have a function, and it's not just so that we can look good or look different, or it is so that we actually do what it is that God wants us to do in every situation. I don't know, it's probably 10 or 15 years ago, there came this statement on everybody that was any way associated with, what would Jesus do? And we all had bracelets and bumper stickers and all of this kind of stuff. Now, you know me, I didn't have any of that. Okay, I've just a statement that I've never really sort of embraced, because I say this, it's not about what would Jesus do, it's about what has Jesus done. In other words, we are to look at his life, we are to look at his teachings, we are to look at the stories that he told us, all right, and say, and so how did he react in that situation? And then in turn, we are to model our lives after that. Just to ask the question is somehow to end it without ever looking at it. So I'm all about what did Jesus do? Now, there's nothing wrong with the other question, but I think importantly, the church at Ephesus was struggling basically with some issues that I want us to look at. First of all, the city of Ephesus was the epicenter for the worship of the goddess Diana. And this was a Greek goddess at this time. And there is a picture of supposedly what her temple looked like. And this was the center of arts, of entertainment, of commerce, of banking. Everything took place in Ephesus as a result of Diana's temple. Diana was seen as the catch-all god of fun stuff. Because most of the other gods that they worshipped had a single function, had a single purpose, or was a ruler that they were associated with in some way. But Diana was called our mother of Ephesus. And she was the god, if you look over here on the right, she was the god of what we would think of as the mother goddess, protection and care. She was, believe it or not, the god of hunting and success at that. She was what we would think the environmentalist of that time. She was about the earth. She was the goddess of the earth. And she was also the goddess of children and fertility. And all of these things, in some way, were rituals associated with the temple at that time. And this was what we would think of as the primary industry of this city. And everything else was, in some way, a support industry, all right, to the temple, to the worship of Diana. And people came from all over the world to participate in the exercises and in the practices of Diana. Now, you see down here at the bottom, you see these statues, and this is where our scripture comes into play. Many of the new believers were silversmiths. They were people that made pottery. They were people that in some way were in a vending industry to the temple here. Or maybe they actually worked in the temple, or maybe they were in the pottery industry, which sold pottery to the temple of Diana. And you see these silver trinkets down here. The temple would sell those, and if you took that with you, it was like actually carrying with you the spirit or Diana, a piece of Diana herself. And so in turn, you would have success in whatever it was that you had gone there to make sacrifice for. Now, as these people became believers, they begin to see contradictions in what it was that they did and the teachings of Christ. They begin to see this contradiction about the temple, their work in the temple, being silversmiths, making these trinkets that the temple sold, then in turn said, this is really the goddess of Diana, and she's going to take care of you if you'll purchase this. And it was just a big racket, if you will. A big racket, these trinkets, this silversmith. And in the center of this temple was the statue of Diana. And you see that she has many breasts because she was the goddess of fertility. She was the goddess of motherhood, all of these different kinds of things. And so they sold in some way trinkets, or you could make sacrifice, you could do something like, there was all kinds of things associated with the worship of Diana. And in some way, almost every industry in the city was directly participating or was a vendor to the temple. And you can see when these people became believers, all of a sudden there was this uncomfortableness with what it was that they did and calling themselves believer. Now, remember what my friend did when he started a church in Vegas? Almost immediately, the church began to minister to people in what we think of as the gaming or the entertainment industry. Now, not all entertainment is evil and bad, and I would be the first to say that. But there was an uncomfortableness among the church members and the church people about their participation, you see, in this temple, working there, being a vendor to the temple. And so the Apostle Paul, he writes this letter. He says, don't waste your time on useless work. Now, he's speaking to the group that I have just described to you. And he's saying, listen, Don't waste your time on things that are not really going to matter. He says, mere busy work, the barren pursuit of darkness. And there were a lot of dark things that we would think of as dark things that happened as a part of the temple. Of course, the fertility ritual was basically in the form of prostitution within the temple. In other words, there was a whole group of people that worked in that industry, and that was the exercise or the sacrifice of fertility, and that whole industry took place there. And the Apostle Paul says there's just all kinds of dark things that are going on here. Dark. He goes on to say, expose these things for the sham that they are. It's a scandal when people waste their time on things that they must do in the darkness. Now, remember, this is their employment. This is how they make their money. This is how they feed their kids. This is how they pay their mortgage. This is how they pay their house payment and their car payments and all of these different kinds of things. And Paul is saying to him, listen, you need to just rip the top off of this whole thing and reveal it for the scam that it truly is. Rip the cover off of those frauds and see how attractive all of this is when it's exposed as it really is. So here's what Paul is saying. All of these people are coming here, and in some way, they think this is making their lives better, that there is actually a God of Diana, that somehow she cares about their life, that she's going to participate in their life, and they're hunting, their farming, their fertility is all going to be better because you came here and paid $1,200 to make sacrifice. And he said, you know that's a scam. You work in it. And why don't you just open the lid on all of this and say to people, listen, you're getting ripped off because this is nothing. We make these trinkets. We make this pottery. We make these little statues and sell them to the temple. This is what Paul was saying. Wake up from your sleep. Climb out of your coffins. Christ will show you the light. So here's what he's saying. Listen, get a hold of yourselves. Get a hold of yourself. Don't participate in all of this kind of stuff. He says, I want you to see this for what it really is. Now, I want to stop right here and take you on a little journey. I always say when my wife is working at the furniture market that I'm homeless. Because, you know, a home is people. It's not a house. And so when she's not there, I seem homeless. And you know that several times a year she goes off to furniture market and does showrooms. And I said all that to say, she's not here this morning, so I'll tell this story. Her grandparents were North Carolina tobacco farmers. And they had a 40-acre allotment. And that's a huge allotment of tobacco. And they had a man who was basically what you would think of as the guy who ran the farm. And then back on the backside, there were probably five or six what we would think of as shacks where the people lived that actually worked in the tobacco. And when I first met Joy, all of these people were people of color. In the last maybe 20 years after that, they were all what we would think of as immigrants. And they would pick tobacco, and they would work these tobacco fields. And you may not know this, but for instance, 1 acre of tobacco will sell at the tobacco market today for about, you ready for this? $10,000. So think about 40 acres. I mean, that's a huge industry. And so when I came into Joy's life, you know, we went to her grandparents and we'd go there and, you know, like on the way home, I would say, hey, do you not see some problems here? Problems with what? I said, well, I mean, like, the people that live there and work there, I said, does that not ever bother you? What do you mean? What do you mean? I said, well, it just seems to me that just, I don't know, it's just not a good thing. And I said, and tobacco, I said, she said, well, I've never smoked not one time in my whole life. That's what she told me. That's good. I said, but I said, do you not see any problems here? And she said, listen, I grew up here. I grew up this way. I grew up around all of these people. And I, she said, strangely enough, we love it. And furthermore, you're a Yankee. This week, Friday night, I came over here with all my camera equipment and microphones and all this kind of stuff, and had the youth group tell me what they would ask God if they could ask him anything. And I went through this whole process of bidding all these things, and then the next day I put the card in the computer and was going to edit it and all this kind of stuff. And I'm sorry to say, but every time I pushed the on and off, I was doing the opposite of what I thought I was doing. So I have all of these teenagers that are getting up out of the chair and walking away. I had one teenager say, if God has gifted us, he has talented us, and he has this expectation in us, why is it so difficult to become that? I thought that's a pretty good question. And another one said, I would like to ask God why, if this is me, he also created two more that look just like me. Of course, we have triplets in the church. It was interesting, though, to just listen to what it is that they would ask God. And here is what the Apostle Paul says. He said, make sure that you understand, all right, what the Master wants from you. What is it that he wants from you? How does he want that to be? And what does he want that to look like in your situation? I have some things that I want to say. Stop doing stuff just to be busy. I remember when I first started pastoring, I used to think if I could just get one more activity at church, we would be a better church. And that's back when you had just, I mean, like all kinds of things. But I thought that. I thought that godliness was in the busyness of the church. The busier that we were, that somehow the more godly that we were as people. Well, I don't think that anymore. And I don't know if it's because I'm older and don't have as much energy or it's truly spiritual. But I don't think that anymore. Here's another thing. There are things that are morally okay, but not wise. A lot of those things. I mean, it's legal, probably not even sinful, but I don't know that that's a wise thing. I ran across this week an unbelievable deal on something that, you know, I had been looking for a long, long time. The deal was incredible. And it turned out, in order for me to purchase this unbelievable deal at this time in my life, I was going to have to put it on one of my credit cards. Well, there is no deal if you can't afford it. See? So I didn't do it. Now, you should be clapping and cheering and just everything else, okay? See, there's no deal if you can't afford that. And it didn't matter that I'd looked for it for probably 5 years. And I mean, it was an incredible deal. I would have had to put it on the credit card. And, you know, I pay it off next month. And how many times have you actually done that? There are things that are morally okay, but they're not wise. I mean, when I actually considered the good deal and I said, okay, conceivably this is how long it would take me to pay that off on a credit card at 23% interest, it was going to cost three times that incredible deal. See? So I didn't do it. He said, you got to just stop going with the flow, just running along with everybody else and never questioning anything, just like going along. He said, unwise or careless, without substance. I want you to know, the worst decisions that I've ever made in my life are when I was angry or afraid. Worst decisions I've ever made in my life. I was angry and I was afraid. Think about how that works in your life. Think back on good decisions and bad decisions. Angry or afraid is when I've made the worst decisions in my whole life. So automatically now, if I'm angry at somebody or something, I'll back away and say, you know, I have the two-day rule. Somebody sends me an email, it makes me angry. And that does happen. My rule is 2 days. I wait 2 days to respond. And you cannot believe the difference in the response 2 days later. It doesn't have a machine gun in it or anything. It's just totally different, okay? Afraid. Well, morally, there's nothing wrong with being afraid, but I make bad decisions then when I'm afraid. They're not rational. They're not considered. They're not careful. They're not wise. I'm afraid, you see? They're impulsive. Careful is wise. And this is what I want you to say. Ask it, what is it that in this situation that Christ did? In this situation, what did he do? When he was confronted with something similar to this, how did he respond here? Become intentional in your life in making these kinds of decisions. Own up to truth. In other words, I say about myself, I am the sum of all the decisions that I have made to this point in my life. Now, I've been placed in different situations than you have, but I am the sum of all of the decisions that I've made thus far. What does God want from me? What does he want from me? He doesn't want you just busying yourself with activities. He wants you doing things that will have an impact first on your life, then on the lives of other people. Just don't be busy. And he said, don't participate in things that are fooling you and fooling other people about what they really are. Don't get involved in that. Stay away from that. And if you're in that, he says, reveal it for what it is and move on. And then constantly be asking yourself the question, what is it that he did in this kind of situation? Ask it. Ask it. So in turn, you can become that person. If you're in a hole this morning, if you find your life in chaos this morning, getting out of that is stacking one wise decision on top of another wise decision, and you do that long enough, and you can't believe what that does to the direction of your life. Ask it. What did Jesus do when he was here? Constantly be asking it. In every detail.